It was a murder case almost too graphic to even think about. The kind of thing you'd only see on an episode of Law & Order SVU. A Baltimore woman found hidden near a dumpster, missing her head, hands, arms, and lower legs. Once 43-year-old Dominique Foster was identified by the tattoos on what remained of her body, closing in on a suspect became easier for Baltimore police. They say this was an act perpetrated by one of the people closest to her in her life. Her father. This is Roughly Speaking, Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, featuring stories from our city and our state that you can't get anywhere else. I'm Pamela Wood. Thanks for joining us. 65-year-old Lawrence Banks previously was convicted of killing two others before police say he killed his daughter. Lawrence Banks' transgressions sparked fear among his family for years. Dominique, a mother of six, reportedly moved out of the state just to get away from him. So how did Lawrence Banks inch his way back into his daughter's life? And how was he allowed to roam free after two murder convictions in the first place? We're joined today by Baltimore police reporter Jessica Anderson, who has seen a lot of terrible things in her years with the Sun, but perhaps nothing as unsettling and downright gruesome as this case. Jessica, thank you for joining us.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, Jessica, this story, like, literally took my breath away when I first read it, and even after rereading it, it's still hard to believe. You've documented that Dominique is the sixth person close to Lawrence Banks who has ended up dead, and he's been charged now in three of those cases. When you started reporting on this case, did you have any idea of what you would uncover?
No, actually. This case kind of sparked our interest because there really wasn't much information that came out initially. Police just put out maybe one or two sentences saying that they had found a body of a woman in Northwest Baltimore near a dumpster, and that was it. And then after, I think, maybe 1 or 2 weeks, we started to wonder, like, well, whatever happened with that? And we, you know, just tried to get police to identify the woman, and they wouldn't do that. But then one of my colleagues got basically a tip that, you know, we should look into this. And then we heard about how the body was found, basically that it was missing a head. So we pursued that tip because even for Baltimore, which has so many murders, that really stood out to us as very unusual. And we thought, well, if this case isn't solved, you know, we might not be able to at least get that on the record. So we wrote a story just about that. And then after, it was a very short story, but then I think like the same day, a family member of Dominique Foster reached out to us and they identified her. And then they also told us about Lawrence Banks. They sent us a link to one of our old stories by a former reporter, Julie Bykowitz, who did some really great work. And we knew this whole history. And so anyway, the family member told us that the whole family suspected him. But at that point, police hadn't charged him.
How much longer did it take from the time that the family reached out and said, hey, we think Lawrence Banks did this, till the time that he was charged by police?
So it actually happened pretty rapidly because I think the family started to suspect him because they were aware that police had executed the search warrant at his apartment. And you'll see in the charging documents that part of what led police to Lawrence Banks was Dominique's family. You know, they know his history, his prior convictions, and they had said that they had suspected him in other killings. So that happened pretty quickly.
And so let's go back and talk a little bit about the family history. If police are right and that Lawrence Banks killed his daughter, Dominique, this wouldn't be the first time he attacked her. So explain to me what happened back in 1975 when Dominique was just a baby.
Yeah, so apparently it was a few days after Christmas, and Lawrence Banks got into an argument with his then-wife, Vivian Banks. And again, this is from our prior story that was citing police reports, but apparently at the time he was drunk and he was fighting, and he said something to his wife that something along the lines of, like, you know, she'd be sorry, and that he hinted that he was going to do something to their baby. So then, according to the report, that you know, they, his wife then heard glass shatter and then ran to find that, you know, that he had thrown his daughter at a glass door. And she rushed the daughter to, I think it was Hopkins Hospital. And she had to get, like, I think more than a dozen stitches on her head. But she survived. He was later charged with assault in that case. And at the time, our story didn't identify Dominique as the baby, but family members later told us that it was the same daughter.
So Lawrence Banks is awaiting trial on assault charges against his baby. And what happened to the mom, Vivian, at that time?
So he was out on bail, and according to our past reporting, while he was out, his wife, Vivian Banks, is later found in a closet in East Baltimore. She's dead, but her body was so badly decomposed that the medical examiner at the time couldn't identify, like, a cause of death. And so there was never any arrest in her case.
And now, do we know whether at the time the police suspected that Lawrence Banks was involved in Vivian's death?
Yeah, so in other court documents, police had indicated that they suspected him in her death. But again, he was never charged.
And there was very little there's no physical evidence to go on.
Yeah, not to my knowledge, not that we've included in past reporting.
So Lawrence ends up being found guilty of assault against Dominique, and he spends a significant amount of time behind bars and gets out in 1988. Then in 1991, just a few years later, he's accused of two murders in the same day, his friend and his son. Can you tell me about what happened that day?
So in 1991, prosecutors said Banks committed two murders. He had been in Pasadena drinking with friends when I believe he got in an argument with one friend and shot and killed him. And then he left Pasadena and then drove up to Baltimore. And then he went to a house on Northern Parkway where his son's foster parents' home. And he basically shot and killed his son in the kitchen of that house.
Wow. And that was in 1991, and he was charged with both of those murders. What happened in that court case?
Yeah, that's right. So Banks was charged in both Baltimore City and Anne Arundel County in the death of his son and also his friend in Pasadena. And in the Baltimore City case, he entered what's known as an Alford plea, where basically a defendant doesn't admit guilt, but that there's enough evidence for conviction. But then later in the Anne Arundel County case, he took a plea deal, and he ended up getting a 20-year sentence to be served at the same time, to be concurrent.
So he had convictions for both of these murders and ended up getting a 20-year sentence. That seems to me like that's pretty light, especially considering most people, and was the case with Lawrence Banks, you barely spend about half of that sentence.
So there, I guess in our prior reporting, there was some confusion between the two state attorney's offices. So prosecutors in Baltimore said that they didn't realize that Anne Arundel County was going to give him a plea deal. They thought, apparently in the city, they thought that the Anne Arundel County case would go to trial. But Anne Arundel County prosecutors said they weren't aware of any such agreement. But so he got a 20-year sentence, and then basically he got out before that because of what's known as good time credits.
So Lawrence Banks is convicted of these two murders. He serves some time, gets out of prison again in 2002, and then it doesn't take very long before violence associated with him begins again. Can you tell me about what the next cases were?
Once Banks is released from prison, it starts to sound like he makes some changes. He changes his name. He starts working. He remarries. But court records show that there continued to be allegations of violence against him. His wife then filed three protective orders against him in 2003 and in 2004. I think some people might wonder why that didn't lead to a parole violation. But apparently at the time, the agents didn't know. And they didn't routinely check civil court records. So he remained free. And then later in 2004, his wife filed assault charges against him in Anne Arundel County.
And in that case, he was found not guilty.
Yeah, that's correct.
So then a couple years later, in 2006, two more people who were close to Lawrence Banks ended up dead. How did that happen?
So according to our past story, so Banks had left his other wife. He had a new girlfriend, and the girlfriend, her adult daughter, and her granddaughter were staying in a rooming house in Laurel. And on December 12th, 2006, police say that the girlfriend's daughter and her granddaughter were shot to death inside the house. But the case, there were never any charges in that case. And when I reached out to Prince George's County Police last month, they said that the case remains open.
So this is a lot to, like, wrap my head around. Lawrence Banks' family clearly believed he is a threat. He'd been convicted of murdering a friend, murdering his son, assaulting his daughter. Other people around him turned up dead. Is it possible to pinpoint any specific failures by the police or the courts that allowed him to be free, you know, given his convictions and his history? Where did things, you know, go awry?
Well, certainly if you look at our past reporting, I think there was a breakdown of communication between the two state attorney's offices. Perhaps it sounds like, again, from our past reporting, that he potentially could have been tried and received a longer sentence in one of those murders. There's also, I think, been some changes in how parolees are monitored. And again, it sounds like, you know, when there were these protective orders filed against him, there wasn't any sort of notification. And I believe that would be different now.
Because that was an opportunity where perhaps he could have been brought into court on a violation of probation and potentially, you know, put back in jail.
Yeah, I think so.
So tell me a little bit more about how you were able to document this long history of Lawrence Banks. How did you get all this information from different jurisdictions over decades of time?
Well, again, I really have to credit my former colleague, our former colleague, Julie Bykowitz, because in order to track down a lot of these old cases now, you would have to go to the state archives and request them, which takes some time to both request them and also to go review the files. Also, you know, clearly using Judiciary Case Search website to look up, you know, some of the more recent cases. And, you know, also, so I mentioned to you earlier that we weren't really sure that when we looked at the latest statement of charges, that was for a handgun case, because Mr. Banks is a convicted felon. He's prohibited from having a firearm. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we were looking at this case and we had heard the name from family and from police sources. But at that point, nothing had been filed in Case Search, but we saw this handgun charge. And so then I went to his bail review hearing that week, and it was unusual because nothing really stood out at the hearing. It was very perfunctory, straightforward, related to the handgun charge. But then I waited to get the charging documents, because once you have your bail review hearing, they're usually available. And I had to wait through several cases. But once I got them, you know, it details the murder, how Dominique's body was found, and sort of evidence that was collected at Mr. Banks's apartment.
And now back to the case of Dominique's murder. What happens next? What's the next steps?
So they just recently charged him with the murder. And so now there won't be a whole lot that will happen publicly, but, you know, the attorneys will start to file perfunctory motions requesting evidence.
And I guess it'll move forward to a trial from there sometime down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
So police figured out that Lawrence Banks was the suspect in Dominique's death. Have they offered any reason for why he may have killed his daughter? Any motive?
Well, not yet. Police have not really said, at least in the statement of charges that we've reviewed. But they in the same document, they said that Dominique had been staying with her father recently, and they had police also said that that she and her father had a sexual relationship. But again, they haven't really specified what the motive might be.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming in and taking the time to talk through a complicated and really difficult story. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now, for listeners who want to follow your work, where can they find you?
At the BaltimoreSun.com website, or they can follow me on Twitter, Janders5. It's my handle.
All right, and that's Newsroom Edition for this week. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, head on over to baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to check us out every Friday. And while times may change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thanks again, and we'll see you back here next week.